Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good morning. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is Small Cap. He's a successful blackjack player who uses a somewhat unorthodox approach. He was recommended to us by an email addressed to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. People told me he's somewhat controversial, so I said, Munch, is he worth having on? So Richard said, yeah, let's do it. So we're going to do it. Now, we're pre-taping this show actually in mid-May. And because by the time you hear this, with any luck, I'm going to be out of town. So the commercials are going to be much shorter than usual because we don't know what promotions are going to be going on when it actually is aired.
But I'm sure the listeners will hate that.
Yeah, I'm sure they will. I'm sure they will. But so we're going to talk, and we actually aren't going to do any gambling news simply because 2-month-old gambling news isn't very interesting. So, Small Cap has been playing blackjack seriously for 2.5 years. And after some initial poor success, he became serious about his craft and is now quite successful. He does, however, use different methods than many other successful blackjack players do. Small Cap, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you, Bob. It's a pleasure to be here.
Most blackjack players play short sessions and still get backed off. You manage to play long sessions and, for the most part, are allowed to continue playing. What is it that you're doing differently than other counters?
Well, I just try to act like a gambler, and I try to enjoy myself, and I just try to be me. I don't think short sessions get the money, and, you know, when I look around at other high-limit players playing blackjack, most of them don't play short sessions. If they get up some money, they don't hit for the door. If they lose, they sit there till all their money's gone. So I just try to emulate that, and, you know, if you do the math of card counting, the edge is pretty tiny. So in my eyes, the only way to really make real money is to sit there and just bang out the hours. You know, if you're playing Las Vegas and you're trying to play 15 minutes at one place and 15 minutes at the other place, there's no possible way you could play 10 hours a day. It just doesn't happen. And if you do, you're really tired, and you probably can only do it for 4 days straight. So I just try to play as long as I can.
So I'd like to just expand a little bit on what Bob said. So you started just a couple of years ago, and he said you're successful. I think that's really a great understatement. Do you want to tell us where you've gone in the last 2 or 2.5 years?
Yeah, no, I definitely will. I'll tell a story. I mean, I'm not going to go into exact details, but I'll definitely give you a good figure of where I was and where I am today. I've been playing blackjack probably since I was about 14. My family had timeshare in the Caribbean, so I started playing blackjack, you know, in Aruba when I was 14. And my father always knew a perfect basic strategy, so he taught me that at a young age. And he did, ploppy progression betting and told me it worked. And so I got older, and it clearly didn't work. And I was sick of just playing blackjack like a ploppy, and I stopped. I used to live at home, so I had a good amount of disposable income. I bought a condo, and I was like, you know what, I can't really afford to be gambling anymore. It's not working. Let me just stop. So when I purchased the condo, on demand was the Holy Rollers, and that's kind of what got me starting. I watched that video, and I already knew perfect basic strategy, and I think that's one of the hardest parts to learn. So I watched the video, and I said, let me try it. So I sat home for I don't know, 3-4 months and practiced every day for 2 hours. And then, you know, I showed my family what I could do, and they said, why don't you try it? So, I mean, I made a couple posts on BJ21 about the exactly what happened. But long story short, I tried it. And the thing I had to overcome is I was gambling prior, so, you know, I wasn't really able to handle the losses. I played, I think, 180 hours off the bat first, and I was losing. And I'm like, does this really work? So I just, you know, kept trying and trying, kept practicing at home.
And I'm kind of surprised that 180 hours wasn't enough for you to just quit.
No, because, you know, I mean, I don't know if you remember or not, but I was blowing up all over Norm's forum. And I brought his software before I started playing. And on his software, it tells you you could run like 400, 500, 600 hours, you know. And I just kind of made a commitment I was going to see it through the end. Either I was going to lose the money that I had towards it and not waste any more time on it, or I was going to be successful with it. So that didn't happen, so I saw it through, you know. And I think a lot of players might in the beginning just say, oh, this is terrible, I'm going to stop, you know.
Yes, no, I think that is what happens exactly to a lot of players, is 180 hours is a long time. I mean, when I started, I went 160 hours, and I did stop.
You were playing great games, too, right? Like half a deck strip rules.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was back when the count games were tremendous. And,
yeah, they're gross now.
Yeah, yeah. But so in 2.5 years, you basically went from zero to mid-six figures.
Yeah,
which,
well, I mean,
I would say for a card counter, you know, that puts you in the top, you know, probably top 1 or 2%, you know, of card counters in that amount of time. You know what I mean? A guy starting from scratch and building a bankroll that big in only 2.5 years,
I don't want to give myself too much credit. I don't want people to think I mean, I know there's some guys that start with like $3,000 and run it up into $1 million. I started with 25 grand that was liquid that I had, and then I made a post that, and when I say this is going to sound a little embarrassing, but it's the truth. I had 110,000 equity in the home. I had like 25,000 in liquid. So I went to Vegas first, and I think you can count the games there for like 25,000. I mean, they have some pretty good double deck games, but when you come back to the East Coast and you see what's around, I mean, to really have a shot at and make it worth your time, you have to afford $50 minimum. So I had the software, and I knew I needed like $75,000. So I talked to my father, and I was working with him at the time, and I'm like, "What do you think I should do?" I go, "It's not even worth it. There's a good chance I could lose the $25,000 if I don't have the capital behind it." And he was like, "Well, you know, how do you know you're not going to be good at it, or you're not going to like it?" And I was like, "You're right. You don't know." So if I lost the home equity line of credit, I still would have had, you know, like 60,000 equity in the home, and the payments wouldn't have really bothered me too much. So I just took a shot with it, you know, with a reasonable risk, and I haven't looked back since.
What?
I mean, that definitely took some, you know.
I
wouldn't
say,
recommend that to anybody. I'm just being honest, and that's how I got started.
No, I think it's an incredible story. I mean, I think it's an incredible story for a couple of reasons. One, because you did have the big losing streak at the beginning and weathered through it. And two, because you did this completely alone. You don't play with any teammates or partners, right? I mean,
I taught myself. I just read everything online. What was that other site before? Blackjack Info. They had some really good, they had like a 24-course card counting course, and like when everybody I talk to wants to learn it, I just usually tell them go through that course and see if you're interested, and then come back to me. And nobody ever comes back to me.
Right, and that course is still there at blackjackinfo.com.
I'm on the computer now; I can check, but
yeah,
I'm
no, I'm
sure
pretty
it
sure it's still there. It's Ken Smith's site.
So
yeah, it talks about Kelly betting and all that stuff, and then it just talks about what it is. I think the biggest thing for me though is I had perfect basic strategy down, so. And I just knew it didn't work. Like, I mean, I used to go to the Showboat, like, before it closed two times a month for a couple of years. And it just
doesn't
work.
Small cap, what are you doing differently today than you were, say, 2 years ago in terms of gambling a blackjack?
Gambling a blackjack. Well, I'm betting a lot more. when I first started, you know, I first had to learn how to count, and then when you read all the books or go online, it always tells you to play short sessions, don't tip, and, you know, play good games. And that's 100% true, because for me in the beginning, it was really about survival. I couldn't afford to do any of the stuff I do now, and it wouldn't have been too wise. So I was playing optimally, and I think I get backed off just as much as I get backed off then, but now my EV is at least 4 to 5, maybe 6 times more. So, you know, I can get more EV per back off. I'm not trying not to get backed off. I'm just trying to win as much money as I can or get as much EV as I can before the back offs happen. So I just try not to place, I just try not to play like any other counter would, you know, so they can look at me, and I kind of want to make the casino gamble with me. I don't want them to, you know, be like, all right, this is a card counter that plays 100% of the buy the book. We're never going to get any action from, let's back them off now. Because the longer they take to evaluate, the longer you could play.
So, but what mistakes did you make in the beginning that, like if you wish you could have a take back, for those guys out there who are learning, who are trying to, you know, take their game to the next level, what mistakes would you tell them, don't do this, that I did?
I would say probably play 200 hours red chipping and don't try to play, like, my smallest bet counting was $600. So that was a big mistake. Because you're going to do things that...
You mean your smallest top bet?
Yeah, my smallest top bet was $600. So that was a pretty big top bet for somebody who'd never counted cards before, you know? I read most people online where, you know, they're just red chipping it. So that's a good idea probably to just handle, just to see how you can handle it. If you get backed off in a market, especially your local markets, you know, don't think it's a joke or think it's cute. Don't go back. Like, I used to get backed off and go back the following week. I was just shocked that casinos had the right to back people off, because I was playing in casinos prior. And I was like, well, they never backed me off before. Why would they back me off now? I'm the same person, you know? And I just really didn't respect it. My first year, I got about 63 back offs my first year.
And were you playing using a player's card when you started out?
Yeah, I always played rated. And the problem is, I mean, I'm not going to go into great detail with it, but the problem is I would really be careful on what names you're using. Just in the beginning with the red chip, I probably just wouldn't use a card just to get a feel for how to act or behave inside a casino. And then I really feel if you're going to play in the States, you kind of need to figure a way to get rated. If you're going to camp, if you're going to play hit and run, you can pretty much get away with it without a player's card, and you probably should if you're going to be a hit-and-run style. But if you're going to sit there hour after hour, you have to figure out a way to get rated, I think,
so
if you're counting.
So when Bob says that you play long sessions and don't get barred, it's not that you don't get barred. It's that attitude is, I'm going to play until they bar me.
So this is what I figured makes the most money for me. I don't really – since I play by myself, I can't really talk to teammates. People know I play aggressively, so nobody really wants to go tell me where to go play, you know. So I have to go everywhere. So I'll research stuff online. If I find a market with a couple casinos around it, you know, I have to find the tolerant casino. So I might have to go through 20 casinos to find one place that'll let me play. But if they let me play, that's 200 hours, you know, and then I don't mess around anywhere else, and then I go look for another one. So that's kind of how I do it.
So that's your goal, is to find a market and find a casino that you think you can get 200 hours in.
In the States, yeah. There's other places where you can play like a month straight and still be welcome back.
Now, decades ago, Stanford Wong wrote that the difference between counters and canoes is that canoes sometimes tip. Do you think tipping is a wise investment for your style of play?
I just never saw a high-stakes player. I shouldn't say I never saw a high-stakes player. I mean, most players in the high limit room were tipping an extraordinary amount of money, or at least the players I used to see back in Atlantic City. I know I get a lot of heat about saying how much I tip, and I'm kind of giving an overestimation, but I think it really works to your benefit, and you can really make it up on the back end, I feel. Like, I get tons of free play just from playing. There's tons of dealer's errors. The dealer has, you know, a soft 17, sometimes they go to hit the card when they're not supposed to, you know, and there's just a bunch of things you can do, I think, to make up for it. I'm just trying to get my net card counting EV, you know. It's a good hourly wage, so if I can have a place that lets me play, you know, I just try to do little different things, and I think it really works. I don't know. A lot of people don't, but, you know, it hasn't given me a problem. I mean, I haven't missed the money, so.
You know, I've had conversations, for example, with Tommy Hyland about what people think their EV is and what their actual EV is. And have you compared your EV compared to what, like, the software says you should get versus what you actually get?
Yeah, I have. I mean, you have to understand, I've played 2,000 hours since I started, so that's a lot. And I've worked a full-time job. Well, I shouldn't say full-time. It's very flexible, but I've still held a job in between that. So in the beginning, I was playing 2 times 300 to 2 times 600, and now I'm going up to 2 times 1,500. So there's going to definitely be different structures in the win rate. But right now I'm averaging like 375 an hour. That's net of the tips and everything.
Combining the two different spreads?
That's with all my hours played.
Yeah. So
like this year I'm averaging like $800 an hour, but I played some really good games and I've been running fairly well.
You sometimes buy gifts for casino employees? How does that work?
I don't know if I buy gifts. There's a couple hosts that I've actually tipped going into, but I've gotten really good information from this one host I would be playing, and this is a place I played a lot, and I would play probably like 10 hours a day at least. And he got me from the blackjack table and goes, hey, there's a slot tournament. Why don't you come into it? So I never put any money in a machine at this place, and he put me in there. You know, there was only 100 people. I think the prize pool was $50,000, and this one slot tournament, you had to press a button on the screen, but there was a lot of older folks, and they didn't know that, so they were just hitting the regular slot machine. So I got like second place pretty easily on it, and it was, you know. So I went up to him. I said, hey, if you ever get me into these, let me know. And I gave him $300, and you know, ever since then I've been hooking him up, and he tells me some really good information, and you know, I think it's worth it, but I think you got to pick your spots wisely with that one.
Yeah,
as for food, you know, I think it's a great idea. Everybody makes fun of me for it, but you know, I don't think anybody ever asks a floor person if they're ever hungry, and most, I would say 95%, they're not going to take you up on it. But if they do, it makes you memorable, so that's why, like, for my style of play, I'm going to be memorable anyway. So now I have a floor person that's not going to bust my chop, so I'll seek them out, and I'll just play in front of them. You know, I think in Atlantic City, it's real important to find who the floor people are, because there's some floor people that are real sweaty, and it's going to make it real hard for you to play, but then there's some that just don't care, and they're just trying to, put their 8 hours in. And those are the people that are going to notify the shift manager. So if you can find a person that kind of lets you play unbothered, I think it's a pretty good.
I definitely think that's valuable, and I think building relationships with hosts can be extremely valuable. You know, a lot of people think that they can't bar you in Atlantic City, but
I've been barred multiple times.
And didn't your father get barred?
Yeah, he got, but that was in Connecticut. He got barred. I mean, I could tell that story. That's pretty interesting.
Go ahead.
I was bouncing between Foxwoods and Mohican, and I was doing that for a long time. I was using multiple names, and I think I did that for almost a year, not straight, but, you know, they were in the rotation. And my father had clients up there, and that's, I mean, we live not that far from the city, so that's like around 150 miles. So he used to go up there because he used to get the rooms comp because he plays blackjack on the square. And he had just happened to be going there. That was a Saturday. He happened to be going there on a Sunday. And he was playing blackjack, and they went up to him, and they said, sir, you can only flat bet. And he wasn't, you know, he's not counting. And he was like, well, what do you mean? He was like, well, we don't want you raising your bets. And he thought that was weird. So then he went for dinner, and he snuck back, and he kept playing. And they said, didn't we tell you can't raise your bets? He goes, well, that's ridiculous. Long story short, he got trespassed, and he's not allowed to go back there, so I don't know what's that about. But and that's happened to him a couple times, believe it or not.
Because he's using the same last name as on one of your players' cards.
But he has my name. I'm a junior. So.
Yeah, but you have lots of names, apparently. So.
yeah, but I kind of gave that up in the beginning. I did that more when I was more... in the beginning, it's just not worth the trouble now, to be honest with you. I mean, I've had too many close calls.
Well, I feel sorry for small cap senior. Okay.
Well, it's good. He's not playing blackjack. I mean, it's not a bad.
Yeah, actually, it saved him money, right?
He could afford. He doesn't play huge stakes. I mean, for his income, but, you know.
In one of your...
It's a little embarrassing, but whatever.
In one of your emails to us, you said you've been evicted from hotel rooms, and you had some interesting stories about that. So I'm actually looking forward to hearing this.
Yeah, this is probably the most embarrassing story, and I promise you it's true, what I'm going to say. But, you know, it's the truth that happened. So after I played all the East Coast casinos, I couldn't really play anymore except this one place, and it doesn't offer a good game. But the comps were great, and they would let you, you know, and they let you play. And I was already barred or countermeasured, let's see, front swing on day shift and grave shift. So this is swing shift. So this is the only shift I can play. And for whatever reason, Atlantic City, it's not like many other markets. Like, I don't think the intercommunication through shifts is that great there. But for whatever reason, I was able to get in that shift pretty well. So I started playing, and I think I lasted like 3 months playing every Friday and Saturday. So after I think this was the weekend of Thanksgiving, we were done with dinner. I told my family I was going to go. So I went in there. They only had one hotel room left. I go in, and it was real smoky. So I decided to go play after I check in. And first night, I go back to the hotel room, and I tell them, you know what, this room's too smoky. I got to get another room. So they had like one of those handicap rooms with the showers open. I go in there, and the room's not really clean that well, but, you know, the bed's made. There was a towel in the bathroom. So I go back downstairs and say, hey, do you have any other rooms? This one's not clean that well. So he said, no, this is the only one we got. I said, okay, whatever. So I go to bed, wake up the next day, and start playing. And that's the night I actually get barred. And I had a bunch of chips because I was playing that place for like 3 months. I had, I had like 50,000 chips when I got barred. So I was nervous that if I was going to go to each window, they would accuse me of structuring. So I said, let me just go and cash out in my real name. And that's when they put it all together. And that was a big rookie mistake, going back to what Rich said in the beginning. You really don't know how to handle cash outs when you're first starting, but you kind of learn. So after I cashed out, the manager came up to me with security and says, we're going to evict you from the property. So I said, okay. And then he's like, no, we're going to kick you out of the room as well. So I say, sure, no problem. So security walks me up to the room, and now I have a lot of money in the safe as well. So I say, hey, can I get some privacy? And they were like, no, we have to go in the room with you. So I go, okay, sure. And then we go back to the safe part, and I ask for if I can get privacy again. They're like, no. So I say, okay. So I go into the safe, and I'm taking my money out. And when I first got there the night before, I just threw all my money in the safe and didn't really look in it. But now as I'm emptying stuff in the safe, I feel this object, and I throw it on the bed. And it's a 12-inch dildo, and I look at security, and security looks at me, and I'm like, you're not going to believe me if it's not mine. And they just started laughing, and I'm like, well, it's not. And I went straight to the bathroom, washed my hands, and then they escorted me off property. So that was fairly embarrassing, but that's probably the worst story I got.
You going to describe this dildo? I mean, like, what color was it? Did it have any
issue? It was a 12-inch black dildo. It was the worst one you could find.
I'm sure the security guards have been telling that story more than you have.
Yeah, and could you – I mean, I asked them for privacy, too. It just got – I mean, the reason I asked for privacy is because I had a good amount of money. I didn't want them to know what kind of car I was leaving in. But, yeah, it was just fairly embarrassing. So I don't think my recycle is ever going to happen on that casino, so I'm pretty fairly open.
Well, next time you come on, we'll – instead of small cap, I think we might have a new name for you.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
No comment, man.
Okay. Now, playing as many places as you do, you must go through airports a lot with cash. How do you deal with that?
I mean, it's – believe it or not, my home airport, they kind of know me because they've stopped me enough times. The biggest problem is traveling with chips and cash because for whatever reason, the chips will always set the bag off. And now you have a problem with taking the chips out of the bag, and you have to put them in the tray. So the best thing I do is I do like three trays. I have my bag, which has currency in it, and I take the chips out. And in the winter, it's great because I'll put my jacket over the bag of chips so nobody else sees it. But honestly, it hasn't been too much of an issue, but I've definitely had stories. I got referred to the DEA one time, leaving from like New York, going to Chicago. And that was probably my worst one. I could, if I have time, I could tell that story real quick.
Consider yourself having time.
Yeah. All right, great. So I think I had $50,000 in cash plus a casino check for front money made out to a casino, and then I had about I think I had almost like $20,000 in chips. So when I got when they went through the bag, it was fairly easy to prove that I was going to a gambling destination. I also had emails from a host. I also carry my tax return. I carry a blackjack in the law book. I just carry a bunch of different documentation. So TSA says, sure, no problem. They let you go like normal. And then I'm going to the gate, and in the middle of the gate, like hidden, there were people. There were, well, I don't know, they're cops, but there were like plainclothes detectives asking for people's boarding pass. And when they got to mine, they said, oh, do you have any drugs or currency on you? I said, well, I have currency. I shouldn't have said anything, but, you know, in the heat of the moment, you kind of don't know. So then they rip my bag away from me, and they take all my currency, and they start putting it in the gate area. And the big problem is they're boarding the plane, so now all the passengers know I have all this money on me. And, like, I politely point that out to them, like, hey, this, if you guys want to talk to me, why don't you, you know, let's go somewhere else to talk to. Let's not let the whole plane know I have all this money on me. And then they just kept asking some crazy questions, and after like 20 minutes of it, I was really getting sick of it. I didn't do anything wrong. So I just asked them if I was being detained or arrested, and they didn't answer me. And I just kept saying that, and they said, no, you're not being detained or arrested. I said, well, can you pack up my money and let me go then? And they let me board the plane. And that was like the last time I ever had an issue. But I have been caught with large sums of cash going in and out of the airport. And, you know, I know it's a small sample size, but I haven't been given too much of a problem, to be honest with you.
You haven't had any driving stops?
The only driving stop or scary stop I had was actually out of the country. But other than that, I don't drive that much. I mean, I fly into a place, rent a car, and, you know, I'll break up my trip bankroll in a couple different spots. And I'll go to the casino with not a minimal amount of money, but enough to play for the day. And no, it hasn't really been an issue.
Now, when you're betting that much, do you I guess you are playing under your real name now. So if you CTR, you just give up your name, and because they already
I just give up my name. That's it. That's really what kind of pushed me to play more in my real name, or you know, then use different names. Just because I'm sure there's ways around it, but you know, I'm not trying to. I mean, counting blackjack is perfectly legal, and I'm not trying to do anything gray or unethical in the casino's eyes, and they don't like me too much, and they'll do anything they really can to try to hurt me, so you know, I got to try to make it legit as possible.
You must be in the databases, right?
I believe I'm in there, but this is why I kind of use, going back to like buying gifts or doing all that stuff, I think the databases are very reactive instead of proactive, where if I'm playing, right, and I look like everybody else. I have a player's card. I'm nice. I'm friendly. You know, I clean up the table if, you know, the ploppies like drinks or an ashtray, and I'm just like a generally nice customer to be around. I'm not going to be the first person they're looking up, you know. That's why if I go play some casino in the Midwest that doesn't get much action, they're going to look you up based on the size of your bets, regardless of what you do or how you act. But if you play a casino, you know, that on the weekends there's people betting $4,000 or $5,000 a hand that are squares, I mean, you could last a fairly good time if you're just friendly, nice, and they don't make a call. Half the time I get barred from these places that take action is the fact that, you know, the win gets too big and your account gets reviewed, or you ask for too many comps. Like, let's say you have a lifetime account that's up $75,000, and you ask for, you know, they keep comping you, and they keep comping you big dinners, massages. The host boss has to look at it and get referred to the shift manager. I've been caught that way. So now I just ask for the minimal stuff. But I think it's very hard to win more than six figures counting cards at an individual casino in the States. I don't think it's very easy to do because it's pretty obvious what you're doing, you know?
Yeah.
But you have been very successful at this, so why do you count cards part-time and have a full-time job rather than the other way around?
Well, I just don't – I don't know. In the beginning, it was just let me stop losing at blackjack. And then when I first made some money, I'm like, let me try to win $100,000. And then once I won $100,000, it was like, well, let me try to make two. And then once I hit two, it was like, okay. And I just noticed the goalpost is going to probably get pushed back and pushed back and pushed back. I don't know if that's a normal thing, but
It is.
I don't know if it's sustainable, like, for a 30-year career, you know? And I always want to have my options open. Another thing is I save every dollar I make just because I don't know if it's, you know, I don't know if I'm going to be able to continue to do it forever. I just want to make it worth it. And it's really a nice head start it's given me. So I work with my family, and I love them a lot. And I basically, a couple months ago, I asked them if I could just leave because there's a lot of places I already know where I want to go play. And it's not logistical to fly in and out every weekend. And they were like, do what you want. I don't want to hold you back, but, you know, we'd like to have you around. And so they just, you know, let me answer the phone. If a client calls, they cover for me. The clients can call my cell phone whenever. And it's a pretty laid-back business just because, I mean, it's pretty handled. The money's invested. I'm a financial advisor. And well, I don't take any new clients, but I also don't grow the business. So I'm just kind of, no, I'm just kind of handling it. If it costs me more money than I make, then I'll eventually give it up. But I'm going to try to hold on to it as long as possible.
Yeah. Income doesn't hurt. Plus, you get health insurance that way, right? I mean,
yeah, but we're a small business, so I mean, he's paying for it. It's not like the, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's crazy. I think it's like $20,000 for like three people.
Wow.
I don't think it's cheap. Yeah. So it would probably be cheaper for me to go in the marketplace and get it, but.
It seems like your parents are saints. They go,
yeah,
oh yeah, you want to borrow $50,000 from us to go gamble? Sure, it seems like that's a good idea. We believe in you. Now, there's a number of parents who wouldn't act that way.
No, wait, I thought he got a home equity line of credit.
No, I had the equity in my home, but they just gave me the confidence. They're like, yeah, it's not a bad idea. But you have to understand, too, like, my mother and father both helped me practice. Like, sometimes when the office is quiet, they'll deal me cards. So, I mean, we're all pretty close. You know, there's really no secrets going on. Which is also kind of nice. When I hit I lost for 500 hours straight, and took me like a year to dig out. And, you know, you kind of doubt yourself when you go through that. But if you have, like, people behind you saying, no, what are you doing? Just keep doing it. You're doing great. What do you mean?
Wait, 500? I heard the 180 earlier, but 500? You had another streak that was 500 hours?
Yeah, it took me, yeah. I went from, my bankroll went from like 275 to 145 in that point. But I kind of just looked at it like, well, I started with nothing and now I have 145,000. Why would I stop?
Why do you think it, I mean, 500 seems like a big number. Were you playing games with a really small edge?
I was playing Atlantic City games at that time. The tables were very crowded. So I would doubt I was getting 100 rounds per hour. I was playing like, I think the game was a 1.75 cutoff. And this was right before, this is where, you know, my bankroll wasn't big enough to travel. So, yeah, I mean, but I think you could lose that on good games too, Rich. I don't think that's so insane. I think that's possible, you know?
Yeah. Well, now, one of the things that also makes you different is a lot of card counters are obsessed with good penetration and good rules, which obviously gives you a higher edge. But your attitude is you'll play a crappy game with a bigger spread if they'll let you play. I think it's all the same thing,
and people don't really work the sims properly. So let's say if I get a heads-up game, and let's say every place that cuts two decks off, you can always find a dealer cutting 1.75. Now, if you can get a heads-up and get 150 rounds per hour, now you get cash comps back, free play, and they let you play for 12 hours a day, and they're not going to sweat you when you have a $50,000 upswing or downswing. I mean, I don't think the game's so bad. I mean, everybody else seems to think so, but, you know, I've seen to make money off them.
No, I agree with you. To me, the number one criteria for a good game is a casino that will let you play. That is paramount. Because as you say, if they're going to sweat you as soon as you start winning, it doesn't matter how good the rules are or the penetration is.
I'll even say something more crazy where people think, you know, I've actually passed a higher edge. I mean, can I talk about a carnival game or not really here?
Sure, yeah.
All right. So there's a whole card carnival game. The limits are low. And this casino, you can tell, doesn't get action on the carnival game. They only have, like, 7,000 in purple in the rack, and that's all they have. So, I mean, if you go on a run, you know they're going to need a fill, and if they get a fill, you're definitely going to get some more scrutiny from the pit boss. That's just my opinion. When they need to bring more chips, the game gets looked at a little closer. So,
sure.
And this place lets me grind out anywhere from, like, 3 to 5K a day in EV when I'm there. I've been playing there for a while. So I just, and there was this one dealer that would give a decent game, and I just never played it. I played it one time, and I could tell the casino was uncomfortable with it. And then I just passed it from them going on to play the crappy count game that nobody would want to play, but they let me play it. So I guess that makes me different too, but I just thought if I played, I can make more lifetime EV from the place if I just left that game alone, if that makes any sense.
No, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, you're looking at the long term rather than how can I extract the most EV over the next hour.
Yeah, I just don't care about variance. I guess maybe because I came from like a financial background, I looked at it as an investment. And in my eyes, you know, if I got burnt out everywhere or I lost, I was still going to, you know, I would just go back to work on Monday.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe that let me play more aggressively. I don't know. But now if I, you know, I mean, if I go on a $200,000 bad run, I can just cut my bets a little bit. You know, it still wouldn't really bother me.
I can tell you from my perspective, going on a bad run and saying, I think I'll just go back to work on Monday is not in my top 200 of things to do.
You just got to have a good attitude, though, about it. I mean, if you're going to be miserable while you're going through it, it makes it much more difficult, you know?
Yeah, agreed.
So you had, you told us about your most embarrassing room eviction. What's your second most interesting?
I've had some serious, I mean, I don't have any funny ones like that. That one wasn't that bad. I mean, I got out relatively safe, but I've had some pretty scary encounters. I was in Vegas one time. They refused to cash my chips for $22,000. And I didn't know they could do that, but they decided to do that.
They can't.
Yeah, I know, but they made me stay in the hotel room for 4 days till gaming come. And
gaming didn't come for 4 days?
No, gaming. We went back and forth. And, you know, I don't live in Vegas, so my flight was the next day. And, yeah, they didn't come for 4 days. They said the casino has to prove you know, to prove how you got the chips. And the problem is I would never buy in, but I would get my chips in another manner. You know, I would never buy in at the table. I would just come with chips.
Yeah.
And so they want, so I think I was down, I think I was down maybe 5,000 for playing there, but I had 22,000 in chips. So they were just trying, this is what they were using as an excuse not to pay me. We're not going to cash out because we don't know you're not using someone else's chips. But they had all my recorded play with high stakes play on there.
So wait, I want to go back a second. So when they refused to call to cash your chips, I assume the first thing you did was whip out your phone and call gaming?
I didn't think it was going to be a problem. It was like kind of the next day. The problem was I got colored off the chocolates mid-back off. And I tried to tell the dealer I don't want chocolates, and they're like, too bad. Like, it was bad.
Huh. Okay.
And also, too, if you play the high limit games in Vegas, they're different chips than the main floor at some places.
Right.
So you can't really even bring those to the window. So, I mean, Vegas is just so tough to count cards, and there's so many different ways that just make it a nightmare. I don't even go back there.
Yeah, my understanding is Vegas is the worst place in the U.S. to count cards.
Yeah,
it's got to be better than Salt Lake City.
Well,
I've never been there. Well, there's no casino there.
So. Yeah, but okay. So I want to go back to this. Okay, so you went to the cashier's cage. You said, "Cash my chips." They said, "No, we're not going to cash them." And
yeah, well, all right. So I get backed off. Actually, you know what? I'm missing a step. I get backed off. I go to the window, and this was also in the beginning too. And I would go give my real name to cash out because I wasn't trying to, you know, get arrested for structuring or anything like that. And I wasn't playing in that name. So that was where the problem came. And they wouldn't, so they're saying, we can't verify the play. I'm like, well, what do you mean you can't verify the play? I kind of gave up my real name just because I knew I was never going to get rid of the high-limit chocolate chips. So I, you know, nobody would have took them from me, and they're very hard to cash. So literally, I went from the table to the cashier and said, hey, I was playing there, cash me out. And then that's when they said, no, we're not going to cash you out. You need to talk to the manager tomorrow. And then the manager said, hey, we're not going to cash you out.
Okay, so that was the first mistake. The first mistake is...
Oh, it was huge mistakes, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
You just walk with the chips and figure it out. But you got to understand, when you have a large portion of your bankroll and you play, you're a solo player in chips, you make mistakes, you know?
Yeah. Well, and hopefully that's why we want to talk about these things, so that listeners who are trying to learn from this will know, you know, as soon as they say we're not going to cash your chips, you should have gaming's number in your phone. You call gaming immediately, and they will come down.
Long story short, I turned it back off into a trespass, and I'll get to there. I mean, what I would do in that situation is now I would say, okay, thanks, I won't play blackjack anymore. Come back the next day, you know, break them down another game, and then, you know, come back and cash them out. And that would have been, it would have took a couple days, but it would have been a lot easier than what I did. And I was only originally backed off, and then I got trespassed because of it. So.
Yeah.
Well, would other games break down? 22,000 in chocolates.
I mean, if they're only backing you off from blackjack, why can't you go play baccarat craps? They didn't say you can play anything else. You make one bet, break your chips, and that's it.
That is a way to get rid of chips like that, is you take them one at a time to another game, like you said, baccarat or craps, and you try to break them down. You play a little bit, you walk, and then you go to another game and break another one down. Once you get down to yellow and below in the bigger places, you should be okay.
Yeah, and I think I learned all that from having these mistakes, so I guess you have to learn it somehow, you know?
Right, yeah, you can't know it till you learn it.
So,
yeah, I'm sorry, what were you saying?
Was there anything else he did, Richard, that was a big red flag that he shouldn't have done it that way, that you could tell some of our listeners who don't know these things?
Well, I mean, just the fact that he was playing under a different name, you know, leads to additional problems, you know. So, but now you currently, you no longer play under other names. You just use your own name.
Well, this is what I also realized, too. Once you get updated, like for me, once I got updated enough, they got more mad at me when they found out I was playing in another name. And I would usually get trespassed instead of backed off. But if I played in my real name, I would just get backed off. And I wasn't getting any more time, you know? Because, like, once they decided my play was suspicious, I was done anyway. So I'm like, all right, well, if I'm going to be done anyway, let me just be legit, you know?
Right, right.
So that was kind of my thought process.
But it's easier for them to communicate with other casinos if they only have one name, and they say the small cap is bad news. Or
well,
whatever.
but here in Vegas, the communication is so good now, it's not about...
I won't even play Vegas. I mean, I can't do it.
Yeah, and it's a picture anyway. So no matter what name you're using, if they send your picture around, every place in town is going
to
know.
And I gotta admit, I've been to a lot of places, and the places that handle the action best aren't the really, really good count games. I mean, there's some exception, but, you know, I found most places that handle action fairly well are games that are stand 17, double after split, no surrender, 1.5 to 2 decks cut off, and, you know, they let you play for a little bit.
Yeah.
Interesting. I'm going to ask you this. This is off the top of my head. And we're going to have a lawyer on in a few weeks. But for card counters who go through airports a lot, then the TSA now has a known traveler system where if you pay your $85 for 5 years and you go through this 2-hour interview or whatever the process is, you go through special lines and they don't check you that closely. Would that be a good thing for gamblers who carry a lot of money to sign up for? Do you have any idea?
I would think so, yeah. But I think that particular thing is for foreign travel. I don't know if it applies in the United States. Maybe it does.
Is it like TSA Pre?
Well, there's TSA Pre, yeah. But there's another thing for foreign travel that gets you through immigration and customs quicker. But yeah, I would think it'd be a very good thing to sign up for. I get TSA Pre now, and you don't have to take off your shoes. You don't have to go through the body scanner. You just go through a metal detector. So it's definitely a big help, I think.
So it would sound like it's much easier to carry money if you have a TSA Pre.
Yes, because if you carry it on your person, it won't set off the metal detector. They would see it in the scanner, but not in the metal detector. So,
but you avoid.
I never even find airports with metal detectors anymore. Everything's got that nudoscope, basically, I go through now.
Well, the ones that I've been going through lately, they send the TSA Pre people through a separate line, and they have the metal detector instead of the nudoscope, as you call it. That's a great name.
Oh, yeah.
you know, everyone that I talk to in the business tends to agree they are much more worried about being pulled over driving than they are TSA. You know, I hear far fewer stories about bad things happening in airports anymore. Far fewer than I hear stories about police stealing money.
I think it's one of the reasons why I like flying to different places, because if you get a lot of heat, you can just jump in a plane and go somewhere that they're not even expecting you as well. So, like, that's kind of what I like about it, too.
But if you were in the Midwest, say, let's say you went to St. Louis and you get a bunch of heat and you want to go to Kansas City, you would fly there rather than drive, or...
Well, probably.
Or up to Chicago?
What I would do is, if I'm playing in the States, I usually would just play like a Thursday through Sunday trip because it's going to have the most action. If I'm going to an area I've never been before, I'm going to do some research online to see what the I'll look at like revenue numbers to see what casino is making the most money. Just like little things like that. And usually if they're making the most money, they happen to usually are the most tolerant. I don't know. That's what I've kind of noticed.
Yeah.
Or at least it's the best guess of tolerance. So if I'll play there, I'll go to that place first. And if they're taking action well, I won't even go scout the rest of the city because I've had a bunch of blown trips where I lost a really, really tolerant spot because I went to go check out a real not tolerant spot and played one shoe and then got flyered all around town. So now if I go someplace and they take it, I just sit there until they back me off and then either – If I think they flyer, I'll go home and try it again in a couple months, or I'll go check out the place based on previous research. But that's kind of how I do it now. I don't recommend that doing for smaller stakes, but for higher stakes, I think it works well because you're going to ruin a bunch of casinos without actually making any money from them.
Yeah, and I agree with you. A casino has to be making money for you to make money.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You can always find something to make money off of, I think. You know, you just if they're making money, you probably can make money too.
Yeah.
How often do you chat with the other players at the table?
I do. You know, I'm really friendly. Like, I'll root them on if they're winning. I'll give them high fives. Not that I scavenge a lot, but you know, if that happens, they're more willing to go halves with you on a bet. Or you know, if you have to make some crazy plays, and they're not going to really yell at you or say anything. And I've noticed that if you're bothered by what they say, you shouldn't. But if you are, you just have to stand up for yourself once and. They'll usually be quiet or leave the table. And I'm playing the heads up a whole lot, too.
Yeah, I was going to say, you want to avoid having other players at the table as much as possible. So.
Yeah. But I think it also, like, there's some places where, you know, if a couple of the high rollers, the other clients, or I shouldn't call them clients, but players like you and the management likes you, I mean, you're just going to get a lot of leeway. You know, I'm pretty sure I have a couple places that know I count cards, but I think they just think I stink because I talk all the time, I tip. And I don't know. They keep letting me play, and I keep winning money, so I'm going to keep doing it.
Very good. All right. We've been talking to Small Cap. He has a slightly different approach to blackjack, but it is one that is successful, and many of our players probably could have picked up a point or two. We're not going to give full commercials today because we don't know when this show is going to be aired, but our three sponsors are the South Point, who have more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. They let me teach classes there, and so that's an indication of it's a good place to play. It's a small, for video poker anyway, it's a small stakes place. The high limit room is not. There's nothing there. Yeah, but for low stakes, it's one of the best in town for me. The Palms has drawings every Friday. And we also, another one of our sponsors is videopoker.com. They have software where they allow you to get correction. They don't allow you to. They enable you to get correction on a lot of games that you don't get correction anywhere else. And so those of you who have not played with computer corrections in any game, you're in trouble. So you want the computer corrections. So we have about 2 minutes left. Richard, how do people find out about old shows and stuff like that?
So first of all, we really encourage your questions. We always like to hear from our listeners. So you can email us at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com or reach us on Facebook at gamblingwithanedge. Or you can, I am on Twitter at RWM21. So if you listen to the show live, you can actually tweet us live questions. So that's that. Now, if you want the show delivered to you as you sleep, you can get the show every week delivered automatically by signing up at iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, or at my site, richardmunchkin.com. You can find an archive of all the old shows at bobdancer.com. So that's where they can find us.
All right. So we actually had a couple of small cap was a guest today because of a good suggestion sent to us. Sent in as an email,
yeah. So
and it worked, and we appreciate that.
And actually, I don't know why I didn't think of it sooner, since we've kind of known each other for quite a while. So, Small Cap, I appreciate you doing the show. I think it was interesting, and I think a lot of listeners of ours will be interested in the show.
Yeah, anytime. If I can help anybody, let me know.
All right, and we'll call you Dildo next time you're on the show. You don't mind, do you?
Probably not.
All right. Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Small Cap. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Mudgkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Mudgkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge. Money.